So let's start. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the LSE Policy and Practice Seminars. So in keeping with the spirit of our seminars and the ethos of our School of Public Policy, we are extremely lucky today to have someone who has expertise and credibility both in the world of practice and in the world of academia. So Nick Crowley, he has been teaching in the School of Public Policy in the University of Sydney, but he has also taken up like senior positions in government. For a number of years, he was an advisor on sustainability and climate change to the UK Prime Minister Tony Blair. He's also taken many other senior positions, worked for and in NGOs and international organizations, and worked with Lord Nixon on the extremely influential and seminal review into the economics of climate change. So we're lucky to have him. Welcome, Nick. And now that I see our Dean Andres, so let him also say a word to welcome you, and then we will hand it over to you. So Andres, over to you.
Hello, everyone. Good evening, if you're in London. Good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you might be. Thank you, Nick, for joining us. Great seeing you again in an LSE-related activity. Thanks, Adnan, for putting it together. And thanks, everybody, for attending. I think we're all justly proud of this policy and practice series that Adnan has put together. We've had some very good speakers. I'm sure tonight's speaker will be a stellar component of this series, and we also look forward to other exciting talks later in the term. So without further ado, let me hand it back to Adnan. Thank you, Nick, again. And Nick, we very much look forward to what you have to say, and I'm sure it'll be a spirited discussion with students. I'll be around until 8 p.m. UK time, and I've got to rush off afterwards, but within an hour, I'm sure I'll get the better part of what you have to say. All the best.
Thank you, Andres. And welcome again, Nick, and over to you.
Thank you very much, Adnan. And I'm really honored, Andres, that you've taken the time, staying back late at work to be part of this as well. I want to say thank you to all the students also. Let me just get my slides sorted. Thank you in multiple ways, no matter where you are. Thank you very much for just taking the time this evening or this morning or this afternoon, wherever you are, to really engage in this way. I also want to say thank you simply for having such a, as I'm sure pretty much all of you do, such a passionate interest in public policy. And thank you for all the work that has gone into getting you to the LSE. And also all the work that you're doing at the moment in terms of the courses that you have undertaken. Now, prior to this, Jemima very generously sent out an email asking you to nominate the sort of three major issues that concerned you as scholars of public policy. My 18-year-old daughter, Ellen, very kindly put together this Wordle. That's her skill set for sure. And all we really learn here is that there are a lot of concerns. I'm not surprised by that. Climate change is in the middle there. Inequality, education, development, there's a lot there. And it's been very helpful to me in framing some of what I want to share, but also I'm really looking forward to the part when we can engage in these questions and we can discuss them in a seminar format. So how am I going to spend the time that we've got before we turn the screen off and we go off and do what else we're doing? So I want to start off by really framing a contribution to a policy and practice seminar around how we think, who we trust, and therefore what we might do. I'm saying a few things about my career, my standing. I want to say a few things about your position. I want to say some things about how I see the relationship between theory, research, and practice. You will be spending a lot of time in the stacks or going through the PDF on your screen to try and synthesize your thoughts and present them as in courses. I want to maybe just say a few things about the relationship between that academic scholarly activity and practice, and how to consider the practice of politics and public policy now in 2020. I'm going to be saying things in a quite different way to if I had been doing this, of course, maybe 12 months ago or so. And then very quickly, I want to go through trying to keep the energy levels high, what I think policy practitioners need to get better at. There is more. I did want to say some things about negotiation. I wanted to reflect a little bit about politics and public policy as a career. I wanted to talk a little bit about how I think that one of the things that policy practitioners need to do is to get a lot clearer about the benefits of economics and how we can make economics part of the public good. These are all too much, too much, I decided, for really to share things in a way that would be useful. And then the bit I'm really looking forward to is not the sound of my voice, but listening to your impressions and discussion and debate. And in doing this, my purpose is to try and be as engaging, as provocative, and most importantly, as useful as I can be to you. If in the next few days or so, you reflect on some of what you've heard in this time, and it's useful to you when you then come to think on something, write on something, read something, discuss something, I will be very pleased. And I'm very conscious of our positions and mindful of today's challenges. And our positions are we're all together, we're in this space, we're on a Zoom call, we've done a lot of that this year, but it is very different. It's a very particular kind of seminar. And I just want to acknowledge some measure of loss that we all will feel in this not being really a seminar where we're all together. I just want to acknowledge that. But I want to try and share ideas in a way that is going to advance your thinking. I want to learn, I want to try to for you to learn from other people's experiences. I want to present perspectives that might be useful to you in your future career or now. But one of the things we won't be able to do is, of course, explore topics in greater depth. And Popper said it well. Popper was where you're not physically there, but at the LSE for a very long time. I'm not pompous enough, hopefully, to call myself a Popperian, but I think we have an enormous amount to learn from Karl Popper. I love what he says about the one excuse for a lecture. It is to challenge. If we were in the classroom together, I would want you to be challenging me. And prior to any seminar or any lecture, I always want to get into students' minds what lies behind, for me, what Popper is sharing there, to challenge. I, as a teacher, will always challenge myself to try and be as good as I can be over an hour and a half, or 2 hours. I will challenge myself. I won't just go to the normal slide deck and do it again once more with feeling. I challenge myself. I would also ask all students to challenge themselves. Busy weeks, stressful times, boyfriends behaving badly, washing up needs to be done. But challenge yourself to familiarize yourself with the content. And then when we come together, be ready to challenge me as I will challenge you as we challenge each other together. I'll try and achieve some of that in the second half. I'd just like you to not be too deferential to the medium and the technology, and I'm sure you won't be. And let's try and have a lively session when we come to the discussion. So my career, my standing, my purpose, I suppose, in my career, Adnan shared with me last evening, rather beautifully redeveloped LSE campus. There we have the John Watkins Plaza. For me, that's not just the name. Mickey Watkins was married to John Watkins. They lived up the road. Mickey Watkins taught me at school my government and politics A-level. I loved Millicent Watkins. She's not around anymore. But there's a, you know, you stand in the shoes of giants, and some of those are well known. The 16 Nobel Prize winners who have either taught or been through the London School of Economics for sure. But they just are the pinnacle of an iceberg. And beneath that iceberg, there are many, many thousands of people over the last 100 plus years who have done much of what Sidney and Beatrice Webb wanted in terms of the purpose of establishing the London School of Economics, to train the administrators of the future. In my career, I've been very fortunate. I could have shown pictures of me waving, smiling, working with people who you would know, Tony Blair, etc. I was going through my glory box the other day and I came across this plan. And you see the big oval in the center there. That's the cabinet table in the cabinet room at number 10 Downing Street. It is shaped like a boat. It works beautifully. The reason for that is if you are halfway down the oval, you can actually get eye contact with anybody around that table. There was I, Nick Rowley, next to the Prime Minister. Julian Legrand was there as well, of course, at the LSE. He's a former colleague and good friend of mine. Matthew Taylor at the Royal Society of the Arts. It all looks a bit blokey. There's Baroness Greengross there from Age Concern. The woman, she's still there in the House of Lords. Sally Greengross, I worked with early in my career. She, I think more than almost anybody, could be said to be responsible for age discrimination legislation in the UK. But I looked at that table and in a way it spoke to me in terms of how we think about public policy. Who do we involve? We involve eminent people from academe. Alan Walker there from the University of Sheffield, Baroness Greengross, an advocate, senior public servants, Paul Britton, Gareth Davies, as well as ministers with a key interest in the policy area. Here we were looking particularly at ageing policy and having a discussion, yes, even way back then about social care and how we support vulnerable people more effectively in the community. As Adnan said, I went on to help initiate the Stern Review. I'm enormously proud of that work. Subsequently, I've still worked on climate change. And that's sort of some of the things that I've done in my career. But what have I done over the last week, I think, is often a more interesting thing to say. I'm on radio this weekend talking about global climate change, 15-minute presentation on quite the position that Australia finds itself in at the moment. I've also been in contact with an amazing organization run by a former LSE alumni in Africa, which is called Idea Education, which is providing digital education across Africa for students. And enough of me, perhaps, let's really get into it. But I suppose where I've landed is we can think about all the what's of public policy, but if that lands on people's desks who do not have the sort of qualifications and skills that you are focused on at the moment, it's all a lot harder. And I would say it's almost impossible. So you have enormously vital work to do now at the LSE, but enormously vital work to do over the coming years. So the relationship between theory and practice, minds and deeds, we can think about policy, but we can also act on it. Theory and ideas, you'll be spending a lot of time in the environment top left on the shelves in lectures, seminars, courses. We read, we consider, we think. This is rarely front of mind to people other than academics and students. Now that's fine. But then we think about practice. What does society actually do to organize its affairs? How are those decisions taken? How are those policies considered? How are they implemented? This is the area of practice. And when our security is really at stake, who do we trust? Who do we trust? The position of the British Beer and Pub Association about whether or not pubs should close, or public authority? And practice is constantly experienced. What I mean by that is we get on and off buses. There's somebody fixing the road. We're breathing air that is regulated through decisions about public policy. And that's maybe not reported on that much, but it's intrinsic, it's ubiquitous. It's what we experience no matter where we are every day. But also the practice is the high end, the point of the iceberg, which is above the water. And of course, practice constantly communicated in the media. Slightly hard to digest this slide, but this is my attempt to try and get across quite the relationship between research, theory, and practice. Research on the left there, it's critical, it's reflective, it's detailed, and research helps generate theory. And theory is critical. It helps explain the world. And ideally, it's then integrated into practice, into actual decisions, into actual policies, into things that get implemented and done. And when that happens, Nick Rowley has got a big smile emoji there on the right hand side. I am happy. I am also happy that when practice, which is also, of course, critical, involves reflective action, but involves decisions that affect the real world, I am also smiley and happy. And if he were with us, I think Karl Popper would be quite happy too, is that practice itself requires further research and analysis to be better. It's not just done. It's not just created. It may feel like that sometimes when the law passes or the announcement is made, but then there's a whole process that lies behind that, which also requires further research. It's not a sad emoji, but it's a sort of slightly ho-hum emoji from Nick Rowley when we get the dashed line that you read three-brained theory, and on the last page it says, we demand further research to reach any conclusion. I get a little bit frustrated by that. I think it's a normal thing to do, but for me, the importance of practice is not just having the cycle at the bottom of the slide, always thinking, how can it be pushed up to the top of the slide to actually engage with practice and decisions which do affect the real world, whether that's in relation to environmental regulation or how we get from A to B, or how we reduce the risks of global climate change, or whatever it is, it's where research and theory is applied into practice that I get excited. So 2020, we've all heard about flattening the curve. 2020 has been dominated by second wave, third wave, fourth wave. You can, on your phone, you can see every day what the situation is in relation to death rates or incidence rates, almost anywhere in the world. Look at the New York Times and you can find out what the situation is in Chicago as of 24 hours ago. And this is but one curve. There are others, many others. And recognize, you know, this is purely impressionistic, but no matter the dominance of that big black COVID-19 infection data point, it's also affecting so many other things. Think on the unemployment rate. Think on how we might consider about politics as usual. That's returning, perhaps, in many jurisdictions. Think on the impact on trust in government from spiking. We must trust government. It is government that is going to help us be more secure. Maybe that's waning. And fear of health impact. Oh, this is really only for people over the age of 65. I should be okay. Not how I think many of us were feeling possibly earlier in the year, and also the effect it has on travel and movement. And there are many others, but